This is On Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. I am Chris Ryan, the Hampshire Healthcare Association, caring for those who care for you. For information, check out nhhca.org. We have a great edition of the program today, as always. And, of course, this is the show that's all about the First of the Nation presidential primary. Paul and I ride with Cory Booker in his RV from Peterborough to Keene through the beautiful landscape of Cheshire County in a fall day. And that's a great extended conversation coming up in just a little bit in the latter portion of the program. Up next on the show, our conversation with Pete Buttigieg, who is here back in the Granite State today and tomorrow, and we'll be back once again the week after. And we're starting to see, you know, what is happening post-debate, and we're starting to see a lot more activity on the ground here in New Hampshire with candidates returning to the Granite State, Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, two candidates that did well in the debate, look like they're about to make a big commitment to New Hampshire with the time they're spending here and staff and resources.
Yep, both candidates upping the number of boots on the ground here in the First of the Nation primary state, which matters because, again, New Hampshire is a retail. If you're going to win New Hampshire, you're going to do it by old-fashioned retail politics. You need a strong staff on the ground to help with that grassroots outreach. Both of those candidates really on the rise, getting a little bit of a boost from the debate. They were both pretty physical in going after Elizabeth Warren and other candidates in the debate, and that gave them some attention. Maybe a pop in the polls as well. We've seen a slight rise, and they also got a fundraising boost as well. Both of them now making their cases here in New Hampshire, Chris.
So a lot of the focus, of course, is on impeachment and what's taking place in Washington, D.C., and you wonder what the impact is going to be on the primary process and how much of what is taking place in the day-to-day campaigning is resonating with voters. But this has been a stretch where Elizabeth Warren has been questioned on a continual basis, whether it's in Iowa or as she's back here in New Hampshire, about Medicare for All. And she hasn't really dealt well with these questions, whether it's on the debate stage or whether it's from, you know, questioners. I saw the other day in Iowa, she was asked in a gaggle about how she would pay for Medicare for All. And she said, well, you're going to have to wait till the plan comes out. Of course, the plan that she has endorsed is that of Bernie Sanders, a bill that was voted upon, which makes explicitly clear what's going to happen to private insurance companies and what the cost is going to be, as it was included in that bill. So I guess she's going to either produce an alternative plan or something of that nature. But what she has supported, it's very, very clear how it's going to be paid for, what it's going to cost, and you know, what the effect is going to be on private insurance companies. Do you think that this is actually resonating with voters, or as there's so much other things taking place, she is not going to see a fall in the polls as a result of this?
There is so much else going on that I don't know how much this is resonating. But as we saw in that debate and in other cases since then, she needs to have a very good answer to this question, because if she doesn't, it's going to come back to bite at her over and over again. And then as we get closer to the voting, which is now only 3.5 months away, it'll start to do more damage. As you said, she's been saying that this plan is coming. But other candidates, other rivals continue to attack her and criticize her for her lack of, I guess,
specificity and yes, being forthcoming about.
Yes, on this. And they also criticize her and Sanders as well for the elimination of private insurance. That is a big issue, and that could really come back to hurt the Democratic nominee if that nominee is supporting Medicare for All in the general election. Just today, as we record this program, Andrew Yang in the state as well. Warren here today as well for one day, tomorrow for a one-day trip. But Yang also said no. He supports Medicare for All in theory, but not in favor at all of the elimination of private insurance. And one other thing with Yang, I asked him about whether, listen, he's on the rise for sure, but what happens if it doesn't work out? Would he serve as the running mate? Here's what he told me.
You've got a very good shot at winning this nomination. It gets better with every month. But if you don't, oh, yes, if you don't, would you consider being a running mate, maybe to a Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren?
My goal is to solve the problems of the 21st century. I believe the best way I can do that is as president. But if it's in some other capacity, I'd be open to that. The goal is really just to make sure that this country is in a condition that I'm proud to pass along to my kids.
Yep, a little snippet there for Yang. Yes, definitely not closing the door to being a running mate. I don't think any of the presidential candidates would do that, right? That's just not the
right
smart thing to do.
Used to be, though, they would. Like, used to be that, you know, I'm not going to talk about that. And they'd kind of move beyond it. But Cory Booker, in the conversation that we're going to hear in just a little bit, he kept the door open. Kirsten Gillibrand, you know, prior to that. And coming up next week on the program, Kamala Harris will join us on the show via the phone. So that is all going to be interesting to see, and how candidates interact with one another based upon those circumstances of perhaps wanting to be a VP. And also, you don't want to leave a bad taste in voters' mouths about how you ran your campaign, which has been interesting with Tulsi Gabbard, where Gabbard is going after the front runners, going after Hillary Clinton, and is seeming to try to establish her own brand, which is completely outside of the realm of kind of the decency and decorum that you expect amongst rivals for the same party's nomination.
I'm glad you brought up Hillary Clinton, too, because this episode, which has been going on for almost a week now, has really, I think, rattled a lot of people. And especially the stories we're seeing the New York Times report and others, they're saying that, Clinton is seriously thinking about maybe jumping into the race because she doesn't see any of the other candidates, including Joe Biden, really taking off. I don't think Hillary Clinton's going to jump in.
I think this is a lot like Mitt Romney the last time, where it's like, oh, if you really, really want me, I'm here.
Is anybody really saying they really want her?
No, and that's the point. She's hoping that as she floats it, that, we talked about Hillary Clinton and running for president pretty much since the end of the last election. I've said the same thing over and over again. Hillary Clinton has spent her entire life either herself on the ticket or her husband on the ticket, and she is always thinking about running for and being president. It's what drives her. So the fact that she's thinking about running for president to me is absolutely no surprise, no shock, and her team is floating this to see what type of interest there is. And right now you have candidates who are pulling 20 to 25% at the top of the field. Hillary Clinton looks at this and says, I might be able to do that.
Yeah,
but I don't think she can.
No, and here in New Hampshire, and I'm sure it's the case elsewhere, a lot of her top supporters from 2016 have moved on, a lot of them with Joe Biden, Terry Schumacher, some going to Cory Booker, Jim DeMears, who we were lucky enough to drive in that RV with him the other day. So, yeah, I don't see any kind of base here for Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire.
But still, if she got into the race, you'd find her probably starting at about 10%, right?
From name recognition alone, yes, but
That's
an early Christmas gift to the Trump campaign. I don't think the Democrats want a repeat of 2016. Nobody wants that.
That is Paul Steinhauser. I am Chris Ryan. This is On Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. When we return, our conversation with Pete Buttigieg. This is On Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. I am Chris Ryan. Pete Buttigieg in the Granite State today and tomorrow. Prior to his trip, he joins us on the program to discuss. Mayor Pete, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Good. Appreciate you joining us for the show. So, as I mentioned, the strong debate performance, it looks like there's going to be a more intensified focus on New Hampshire with stops here over the next 3 weeks. What is the roadmap for you to victory in terms of Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, the early primary states? How do you achieve the nomination?
Well, these early states really are key. So you'll continue to see a lot of me in New Hampshire, as well as visits to Iowa and the other early states. The best way to demonstrate that you can win is to win somewhere. And so I think it's especially important this year with voters so concerned about who can defeat this president and how do we make sure that we put forward a winning nominee to make sure we perform well. We've got a fantastic ground game. We've got the resources to go the distance. And what we're finding is that my message really is resonating with voters who maybe aren't looking for the furthest left candidate possible, but still want bold ideas. And are looking for something different than the most established candidate with most Washington years, too. For everybody else, I think that, which I think is most Democrats voting, I think that our message is going to land. And yet we see there's still more room to grow in terms of voters hearing our message and understanding what it is that for the presidency.
Yeah, I feel like you have kind of found this new leadership lane where there's been a lot of candidates who are trying to occupy it in between Biden and Warren and Sanders, perhaps, to your left. You mentioned winning. So do you feel that you need to win Iowa or New Hampshire to propel you forward?
Well, we certainly need to perform well. And I think voters in other early states will really be looking at New Hampshire and Iowa to see what happens there. So we'll see what the goalposts look like when we get a little closer to the day of, but there's no question that we got to have a good finish.
One of the strongest moments of the debate for you was the healthcare exchange with Elizabeth Warren. We've heard other candidates like Michael Bennett talk about this here in New Hampshire, and it seems like there is growing concern about Medicare for All. You get the polling numbers here in New Hampshire most recently, a public option. You have pushed forth a Medicare for All who want it type of proposal. It seems like that's where the voters are at this point. And do you feel that Elizabeth Warren is being, and I think we could make this assumption, if it's just an assumption at this point, that she's not being forthcoming in regards to the total cost and also what this will do for middle class taxes?
Well, I do think we need clearer answers on cost. I think the central question is the policy itself. Most Americans believe that we do need more options, but I don't think that it's a good move to require all Americans to give up their private plans in 4 years or less. The idea of Medicare for All Who Want It is that we can create a quality public health plan, a version of Medicare that any American can get into. And precisely because I think it's going to be a good plan, I don't see any need to require Americans to adopt it, whether they want to or not. I trust Americans to make the right decision for their own family, for their own health care. And I think that we're going to be better served, not just the politics, but just as a matter of governing. This is a matter of policy. We can deliver a proposal like this that meets the needs of Americans and that something that Americans can unify around. Remember, the next president is going to have a monumental task to unify the American people. Mm-hmm. And with something like the Medicare for All Who Want It idea that I'm putting forward, we can enact a big, bold, and positive reform, and at the same time, also do it in a way that unifies rather than polarizes the American people. Those are the kinds of policies that I think we need, and I think that's what voters are looking for.
I think you make a great point about policies that polarize the American people. And if this becomes an election about, you know, socialism versus capitalism, or Medicare for All versus keeping your current health care, people are generally very adverse to change unless there is sort of catastrophic circumstances which force that change. So do you feel that if a Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders are the nominees of the party, that they're going to have great difficulty in a general election trying to sell the American people on the proposals, particularly if they're not completely honest about what they are?
Well, I think it is going to be difficult to push Americans in the direction folks don't want to go. Now, the good news is, most Americans are aligned with the Democratic Party on major policy issues. Want to see higher wages, want to see more choice in health care, want to see something done about gun violence, want to see improvements in immigration, believe in abortion rights. But we need to make sure that we're really gathering that new American majority and engaging it. If we tried to outdo each other in efforts to look, it's actually more ready than ever to embrace a number of Democratic proposals, provided we can keep people together.
That's Pete Buttigieg joining us here on the New Hampshire Now program. I am Chris Ryan. Washington Post pushed forth an article on Friday in regards to Hunter Biden, and that 2015 a diplomat raised concerns in regards to Hunter Biden's activity in the Ukraine. It's previously been thought pretty much across the board that Democratic candidates would stand behind Joe Biden. Does this change anything in regards to Hunter Biden and Joe Biden's activities?
I just don't think we can allow the president and his allies to change the subject. We are where we are because of not the family of a former vice president, but because the American president confessed to an abuse of power on television, and now his chief of staff has made an additional televised confession that really has led to a constitutional crisis. There's also, I think, the question to be raised, if we're going to be talking about family members of people in power, right. The president right now has a daughter in the White House who's benefiting from Chinese trademarks, a son-in-law who has been exchanging text messages, going around every security protocol there is to exchange text messages with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia after he was implicated in killing an American resident. This administration has a real gift for changing the subject, but I don't think we can allow that at a time when the abuses of power are so extreme, so severe, and so troubling that even an increasing number of Republicans are finding that they simply cannot defend what the president's been doing.
I think you make a key point, and this is something I've talked about a lot, that we have to view them both separately. And what Donald Trump has done should be viewed in a completely different lens. But there is also this piece of it as well. And are there concerns, though, in your view, about what Hunter Biden engaged in, and also what could happen potentially moving forward? Because this is a big concern for voters, is that there is this kind of revolving door that exists around power in which individuals enrich themselves. And that's a big concern for voters.
Well, I do think as we look to the future, we need to make sure that we have the highest ethical standards, especially for a country that will be recovering from the experience of this administration. And that will be a priority for me. And I really want to make sure that even appearances that could raise questions are prevented. And you can expect those kinds of guidelines throughout my administration from day one.
Syria and the situation there has been largely concerning to a lot of Americans, and we still need a lot more answers in regards to what took place. Thankfully, there is a ceasefire. But what took place during that seven-day period and why it took place still has to be answered. Where do you view this in terms of the lens of foreign policy miscues the United States has made, and what needs to be found out in your view?
Well, I think, unfortunately, the consequences of this betrayal of our Kurdish allies go far beyond the situation in Syria itself. That's a major concern because we have seen indications of possible moves toward ethnic cleansing as well as the resurgence of ISIS, and need to make sure that whatever happens next doesn't make that worse. But the problem that we're going to have to deal with now around the world is that the word of the United States will not be believed by allies who we are asking to put their lives on the line in order to stand with American troops and defend American interests. That is one of the reasons why I think you see more and more Republicans and certainly a great number of generals and some of our greatest military leaders expressing outright shock. Speaking as a, I would have had a hard time looking some of the Afghans that I worked with in the eye after what just happened to our Kurdish allies, and this is going to make the job that much harder for U.S. troops and those defending U.S. interests overseas.
Final thing, as you obviously ascend and I would expect to get close to, if not in the front runner status following your debate performance, I'm interested in your philosophy in regards to a vice president and also building a cabinet. And in regards to vice president, would you be looking to this field and looking to one of your quote-unquote rivals to serve in that position, or would you be looking outside the field?
I'm sorry, you broke up. Could you put the question again?
Yep. As you ascend following this this debate, I'm curious as to your thought process in regards to a vice president and a cabinet, and particularly in regards to vice president, would you be looking to select somebody from within this field, one of your quote unquote rivals, or from outside the field?
Well, the most important thing about cabinet members is that they're up to the job, of course, and I also think it's going to be very important to have a balanced, diverse, and gender-balanced cabinet. When it comes to the vice president, the fundamental job qualification is simple, though not easy, and it's somebody who would do a good job in the presidency in the event that I would be killed or incapacitated or unable to serve. Now, assuming more than one person meets that test, then I think you begin to think about how you can further that goal that I have of unifying the American people. I will say that the field of competitors is full of extraordinary leaders and people I'm proud to be competing with. There are also a lot of people who maybe aren't in the headlines as candidates for president, but who also deserve to be looked at. And I'm not going to get ahead of myself, but I do recognize this is an extremely important decision because it's a decision that a candidate makes, but if that candidate wins, the country has to live with it no matter what.
In conclusion, would you be looking at Republicans potentially for cabinet members, independents, and go across the country, or would you be looking for some individuals that specifically lined up with you from an ideological perspective?
Well, as a rule, of course, I'm going to want to serve with people who share my values, but you also don't want a room full of people who agree on everything. And certainly previous Democratic presidents have appointed Republican and independent cabinet members, and I think that that precedent in terms of leadership should be considered very strongly when building a team that's going to serve America well.
Thank you so much for your time.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
That is Pete Buttigieg. This is On Background, presented by the Hampshire Healthcare Association. Up next, Paul and I step on the RV with Cory Booker. Back with more after this. This is On Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. I am Chris Ryan. Cory Booker sat down with Paul Steinhauser and myself on his RV as we traveled from Peterborough to Keene earlier this week. Here is part one of that conversation. First off, Senator Booker, tell us a little bit about where you feel your campaign is at this point. Most endorsements of any individual in terms of elected officials here in New Hampshire, but you look at the polling and it's still in that same spot, but there's so much potential there. Do you get frustrated at where things are going?
I don't get frustrated in anything except for fundraising. I mean, we really are pushing our CoryBooker.com and small dollar contributions, but beyond that, if you look at every past person from our party, They've gone on to be president in our lifetimes. They've always been pretty much where we are right now. But behind, Carter was in 1%, Clinton single digits, Barack Obama 15, 20 points behind Hillary Clinton at this point. All of those things show you that what we, the people that usually win are the people that peak in January, February, not people who are winning the summer or winning the fall. And so we just have to continue doing the work. And in the Granite State, it's all about these events. Last night we had 500 plus people at Dartmouth University, and what people came up to us afterwards is, sign me up. I want to join. I want to be a campus organizer. The more people that hear my message, the more successful and momentum we're getting. And I'm hoping that that continues to rise. And by the time we're in next year, I hope we'll do what Bill Clinton, the comeback kid, or Jimmy Carter, who won New Hampshire, follow in their footsteps.
You know, there was a lot of talk by political pundits after this last debate that, Amy Klobuchar had a strong debate, they said, and so did Pete Buttigieg. They said you did as well, but there was talk that maybe they're looking, trying to position themselves for that center lane, that if Biden falters, that's where they're going to go. Is that your lane as well, that kind of center left lane?
I am trying to position myself as the lane that unifies the party. I don't understand how people think they're going to try to bisect or dissect their way when we are at a point in America where we need to unify our country. And so if you can't even unify the Democratic Party, then it's going to be hard to unify the country. This is one of the reasons why you hear me on the debate stage. It's good to point out your differences. I do that. But with a president of the United States who spends so much time demeaning and degrading the character of other Americans, we can't fall into that trap by tearing each other down, because I'm going to be one of those folks. I hope I'm the nominee, but whoever is the nominee that insists that everybody, and as much as their followers that they can motivate and pump up, needs to unify behind the nominee so we can beat Donald Trump.
Do you feel at times, you know, a pressure to kind of create a moment, so quote unquote, because as you mentioned, you have this groundswell of support. You've laid that groundwork to have future success, but as in the case with Buttigieg or Elizabeth Warren, it seems like they have gotten to a point where there is that moment or moments where there has been an ability for them to rise. And do you know, feel any, you know, pressure to kind of create that moment, or do you think it will happen later on and it's better for it to happen in January or February as opposed to November?
Much better for it to happen in January and February. And look, we're creating a lot of buzz, a lot of stir. I'm making the debate stage time and time again. You know, they set the higher standard for November, where we made that stage already, and there are other people that you've already mentioned that are still trying to make that debate stage. So I'm excited about the energy we're creating, the support that we're getting. And if the fundraising continues to go strong, and we're seeing these small dollar contributions coming into CoryBooker.com in ways that show me that we still have every state in the union. People are stepping forward and saying, we need your voice in this race. We need someone who's talking about civic grace and returning a decency that can pull our country together. Because ultimately, to deal with climate change, remember, that's going to take a mobilization like we saw during World War II, or to get us to the moon. It's going to take everybody engaging, not partisan in majorities, but new American majorities is what I'm calling for, to remind people that the lines that divide us are nowhere near as strong as the ties that bind us. We across this country, from opioid addiction to mass incarceration to people working full-time jobs and still living at or below the poverty line, these are big issues. And to succeed in them, we need a president that can call to the moral imagination of this country and mobilize us in the ways that we beat established voting rights and workers' rights in the past, with big American majorities and movements, really, for social justice and for expansion of opportunity. That's what I'm committed to. Beating Donald Trump is just the floor. It's not the ceiling. I'm fighting to bring this whole country to a higher place.
Is there one specific thing that you have to unite folks around? Because once the election takes place, there's going to be more division no matter who wins, and just the nature of our politics. Is there a particular issue that you feel that you have to unite folks around, or is there a message in order to get to the other issues that you're describing? What's the singular issue?
Well, remember, presidents don't get elected because they have great policy plans. They get elected because they inspire people with a vision for the country.
Okay.
And you know, look, this has got to be a movement election. Whoever, I really believe, in the same way that Bill Clinton and Barack Obama got elected with massive majorities. Remember, their momentum going into their first term was extraordinary and allowed them to do very big things. Mm-hmm. For Barack Obama, it was the expansion of health care. Mm-hmm. We've got to win an election just like that, where we don't just win the presidency. because this isn't about an individual operation. We can't just get across the finish line. No, I want to see majorities that beat Mitch McConnell, which makes us, meaning we need massive record turnouts in North Carolina, in Georgia, in Texas. That's what's going to have us do what we did back in 2008. And so I tell people all the time, look, I'm in this race because I believe that I have a vision that can not only unite the Democratic Party, but can excite and get record turnouts in key constituencies of ours, like African-American voters, that can reach out to moderate voters in general, can even get many of those Republicans who are in good conscience disgusted by the person that's in office.
You just mentioned people don't vote for the candidate because merely because of their plans. And I'm wondering if that's anyway directed at Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's put out one plan after the other.
No, I mean, please, there's been 170, 180 plans put out by every candidate. We are putting out plans. I love mine. I think mm-hmm. in so many cases, my plans are better. Heck, we are the only people that put out a plan on child poverty. How mm-hmm. can that be? So I'm. There's no bigger policy wonk nerd than me in this race. Anybody who knows me in the Senate, that's my forte, is working across the aisle on the intricacies of policies and getting things done. But come on. We all remember, all three of us, just the visionary leadership of the past. Visions inspire, having bold dreams for this country and backing them up with the spirit of grit and will and determination. From FDR to John F. Kennedy, who changed the moon from a dream to a destination. From Barack Obama, even, talking to us about our common purpose and our common cause. I think that this election, people are going to vote not just because of their head, but also their hearts and their spirits and the gut that they feel when somebody gets up there and talks about America and where we can go together.
That's a really good... Oh, go ahead.
Last month, you put out a fundraising appeal. Some people called it a gimmick, but it was successful. You raised
yes.
more than you wanted.
Yes.
Do you going to need to do that again, or was that a one-time shot? And also, do you feel honored that, I guess, Julian Castro is now copying you and putting out an appeal?
Yeah, look, I'd be very blunt with you. Our appeal worked. People said from every single state, close to 50,000 new, 50,000 contributors. We need to sustain that. I will not be able to compete and win if people are not going to CoryBooker.com and saying, you know what, this guy, I want him in the race. Here's $5, $20, whatever. So, yeah, we got to sustain it. This quarter, we've got to do better than we did last quarter, or else we can't get more organizers on the ground, more field organizers, more grassroots organizers. That's what wins elections. It's how I beat a machine, the strongest New Jersey machine, in to win the mayor's seat by grassroots organizing. You need individuals that can do that. I'm proud of the team that we've built. But God, I'm asking people, please, if you believe in me, go to CoryBooker.com and help out.
That's Cory Booker joining us here on the Hampshire Now program. We are traveling across scenic New Hampshire. Fall foliage is very clearly
this
upon
is
us.
Literally this is really gorgeous. Yeah, we were driving up here before, and it was just breathtaking today.
It's a perfect time to be up here. You mentioned something before about, you know, how you go about discussing policy. I think it's a really good point to talk about the why as opposed to the what. And you look at climate change as a clear example of that, or just many of the other movements that you described during your remarks. Is the why more important than the details of the policy in some circumstances in terms of building momentum?
Let's use gun violence for a second. What is it? 90%+ of Americans agree on the things that we know would drive down gun violence. From 90% of Americans want universal background checks. Heck, close to 80% of Americans want common sense gun licensing. I mean, these are things that we all agree on. And I tell people the how we're going to get these things done is not just having a great individual president with a great plan. I mean, heck, Obama gave some of his most moving speeches, not to mention sang Amazing Grace in a way that brought tears to my eyes. That's why I tell people right now, I warn people, if you elect me president, I'm going to ask more from you than any president has ever asked from you for in your lifetime. I'm not talking about putting up with more, God, paying more taxes. No, I'm just talking about the kind of activism that has always enabled us to get big things done, to mobilize this whole country behind the urgencies of our time. Because my grandparents bragged until the day they died about the war effort, and they weren't storming beaches in Normandy, but they were so proud of their victory garden, so proud of the war bonds that this small black family bought. That's how we were in America, all of us making sacrifices for our common cause and common purpose. Well, from urgencies in our nation that are threatening the lives of our country, literally driving down the life expectancy in our nation, from the opioid crisis to the mass shootings and gun violence, all the way to the urgencies of climate change. If we don't have a president that is committed to engaging, igniting, and mobilizing the power of this country, we're going to be stuck in divisive, partisan, really tribalistic politics where we're just tearing each other down, as opposed to realizing that the call of our democracy is to unify. And just to show you the negative on this is, I've read intelligence reports recently about the Russian strategies to undermine our democracy, and one of them is to proliferate our social media platforms with bots and more to try to throw gasoline on the fires of division in our country. They are literally activating strategies to make us hate each other more, and we have to respond to that by working across the lines that divide us, affirm the ties that bind us, and get back to a sense of common cause. That's the how we get the big things done. That's the why I'm running, and that's what I'm going to do as President of the United States.
On that particular topic, in regards to Hillary Clinton's remarks with Tulsi Gabbard, as you know, Hillary Clinton is an individual that measures her remarks very, very carefully. And the fact that she wanted to speak out about a candidate that's 12th out of the 12 on the debate stage, to me, signified that there was a cause of concern for her in regards to Russian interference currently within this election process. I mean, do you share that concern, not necessarily in regards to Tulsi Gabbard, but I'd like to hear about that as well, that they are looking to once again intervene and are perhaps more empowered by the lack of the Trump administration's response to them?
They are actively working to undermine our democracy. There was just a bipartisan report to come out of the Senate Intelligence Committee speaking to Russian efforts to tear down this democracy. Remember what Khrushchev said. He said, "We will not destroy America from the outside. It will crumble from within." And they are actively, insidiously working to undermine us from within. We cannot let them do that. We cannot be complicit in their efforts to divide this country against itself. So yeah, it is a problem. And the fact that this president doesn't speak to that problem, the fact that he kowtows to the dictator that's running that country, that he has better relationships with Putin than he does with Macron or Merkel, this is to me outrageous. The fact that his foreign policy is doing things that continue to empower Russia, giving them further license in the Middle East and Syria to do things that expand their dictatorial reign and influence. So I'm so fed up with our current situation. I am a fighter. And right now we have somebody trying to attack this nation, and we should all be fighting back against them and not doing the things that this president is, which seems to be inviting them to rejoin the G7, fighting to defend their act, going against the intelligence officers, the career intelligence officers in the intelligence agencies, and say they're wrong, he's right, Russia's our pal. You got to be kidding me.
Picking up there, though, do you feel that Tulsi Gabbard, I mean, this is what Hillary Clinton brought up and made a big point of, do you think that either wittingly or unwittingly, she is an asset for the Russians?
You know, I'm not even going to engage on that. I'm just going to focus my efforts on what I believe is most constructive in this day and age. And in this primary, I'm going to continue to stand up and very forcefully affirm that this is a moment that from that our next nominee has to be able to mobilize, to unify, to bring our country together to heal so that we can meet our common foes. And the Russians are trying to undermine and destroy our democracy. And I'm going to be one of those leaders, and as President of the United States, that takes it to the Russians, defends our country, and makes sure that our democracy and this great republic endures for generations and generations and generations to come.
That was part one of our extended conversation with Cory Booker. More comes your way in just a moment. This is On Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. This is On Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. I am Chris Ryan. Now, part two. Paul Steinhauser and my conversation with Cory Booker aboard his RV as we traveled from Peterborough to Keene earlier this week. And Democratic presidential candidate Cory Booker,
you've been very transparent as you run for the White House. specifically on health care and where you stand on Medicare for All.
Yes.
In the last debate, one of the bigger headlines was Elizabeth Warren not answering the question that Bernie Sanders would answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Now she says she's going to have a plan or detail how she will pay for her plan.
Yes.
Is the damage done? Is she not being honest with voters?
I don't know. You guys are much better positioned to be better pundits than I am. I know that, again, it's not a matter of the plan as much as it is how we're going to execute on those excellent plans. We have a nation that's healthcare system is tragically broken. Tragically broken. We pay more money than any other country. You want to talk about expense? We can't pay for what we're doing right now, and it's leaving out millions of Americans. And so we have got to fix this. I think I stand with Elizabeth Warren. I think Medicare for All is the best way to do it. But I also actually believe that it's going to be a process to get there. And we can't just, I tell you, I sat with some unions in Las Vegas who were saying to me, we don't want to give up our insurance that we have right now. We bargained for it. We fought for it. Right. We marched for it. And so we can't be a situation where we're just taking away insurance from folks. I don't think that stuff would pass right away. So I know it's going to be a process to proving to many Americans that we can do this in a better way that's going to drive down costs, from prescription drug costs to eliminating premiums, that there's a better way to do this. But that's going to be a process to get there. And I think that position is not only pragmatic, but it's something that all Americans can rally around.
What if Americans, though, signal to you that they don't want it? Like Jean Shaheen, as an example, Maggie Hassan, Chris Pappas, Andy Custer are all against Medicare for All. What if Americans signal to you that it's not something that they want? Because as you referenced, whether it's state workers, union workers, other individuals want to have choice, and they may see their costs go up as a result of a Medicare for All.
Well, again, this is why I'm saying that I know the complexion of the Senate right now. I know that Senate Democrats we're not a united caucus for Medicare
right.
for All. So, you know, I can name a lot of Democrats in my caucus that would not support Medicare for All. So the next president is going to have to begin to get momentum towards that goal. And that will probably involve things like, hey, we were one vote away from lowering Medicare eligibility to 55.
Right.
That takes a much bigger swath of the public, and it would lower premiums in private markets because it would get more older people out of it.
So you would incrementally work your way towards it with perhaps introduce a public option initially?
Yes.
Okay.
I will do everything possible every day of my presidency to lower costs and expand access. I will not be one of those folks on the stage that's so rigid to say it's my way or the highway, and I'm going to sacrifice progress for purity. I'm going to let perfect be the enemy of the good when every American needs more good. And so, as a guy who actually ran something and knows how difficult it is to execute and to gain ground, I'm going to be the pragmatist in there that fights for the goal always. And I think the goal is every American having access to healthcare, that healthcare is a right. And I will be the president that tactically, through grit and through toughness and creative means, every day works us towards that goal. Because I think it's absurd that we are paying the highest cost. I think it's absurd that people that have healthcare, that often when they find themselves needing it, they realize it's not adequate and they find themselves tumbling towards bankruptcy. We have work to do to get to where I want to go, is to make sure every American has the same quality health insurance that senators have.
Yeah.
Picking up with what you just mentioned a second ago, do you feel that some of your rivals maybe are not flexible enough like you are, not pragmatic enough as you, when it comes to healthcare and other solutions?
That's what voters are going to have to decide. I can only speak for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I am a guy that has faced the toughest problems in America. I was a mayor of a big city, a low-income city. Crime, corruption, a mortgage crisis, which meant I had a foreclosure crisis. All of these issues, we took them on and had transformative changes. Double the production of affordable housing in our city. Take our school system from being one of the lowest performing in the state to now the number one school system in America for beat-the-odds schools, children in poverty, going on to college. I know how to take on difficult problems and difficult challenges and drive success. And so as President of the United States, a guy who came up in a gritty, tough political fights and took on a political machine and beat them and then drove bigger change that now is overflowing into all of New Jersey, that's the kind of gritty, tough leader I'm going to be every day driving progress if I'm the chief executive of the United States of America.
So it came out yesterday, it was confirmed that Mitt Romney had a burner Twitter account.
So
I'm just laughing because it's crazy what often breaks through in the news cycle.
Yes.
And how many followers did it have? We're talking about
had
a Twitter
33.
Account of 30. I thought it was 66. You're like
a lot more
are following.
He privatized. You have to get approval now if you want to follow his burner account.
Yeah.
But he was following. It's a fascinating story, and it's because we're
it's fun.
Nerds
it's a fun
stuff.
Story.
Anyway,
yes.
So. Tell us about your burner account.
I'm really soliciting people to get me the names of my burner account. I already tried B cubed, big, bald, and bold.
They got you some numbers like 9876.
That's true. I think Wonder Woman's boyfriend. You know, being that my girlfriend has voiced Wonder Woman in the most recent.
Now you give Paul a path to ask us some Rosario Dawson questions.
Yeah. So I have a lot of good ideas. For the creation of a burner account. I didn't know this was a thing senators needed to have, but I'm ready.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
It was a fun moment, and I'm not no Rosario Desk questions this time.
Okay,
we've been there, done that. That was so back in the spring.
It was so spring.
And it was good to see her at the debate the other night.
Yeah, she's.
Hey, there you go. I'm sorry.
All good.
Yes.
Seriously, you've got as good a shot as anybody. You're right in the middle.
I'm
of
in the
this.
Mix. Yeah,
you are definitely in the mix, but. If it doesn't work out.
Yes.
And whoever wins the nomination wants you to join as their running mate. Is that something you would think about?
Of course. Who would not think about being vice president? But I'm going to be more, I'm pretty confident, be the one thinking about who I'm going to choose as my vice president. And I just know one thing about the person. She will be awesome.
You want to give us a name right now here?
Nope. I got to win it first.
Would you be more inclined to pick somebody from within the contest or from outside of the contest?
You guys are really good at working, but you're not going to get any speculation out of me on this.
Right.
But I imagine that she and I will be an amazing dynamic duo, really helping to heal, unify, and excite and engage this country.
Not Rosario Dawson?
It will not.
It will not
be Rosario Dawson. Okay. However, she would be an amazing president, not to mention vice president.
So in terms of the makeup of your cabinet, as we kind of bring it back full circle in an effort to unify and bring America together, will your cabinet reflect the entirety of the nation in terms of thought, views, and all persuasions?
Yeah, look, first of all, it'll be an incredibly diverse cabinet in the way that I have fought to diversify the Senate and work with Chuck Schumer to do some really important things that got a lot more diversity in the Senate. And I'm going to talk about Senate staff, Senate committee staffs as well. And look, I would love to have a diverse cabinet, even in terms of backgrounds. I think that it's good to have Republicans in cabinet positions. I think that's really great. But look, I've sat and watched the horrible cabinet appointees be done, like Betsy DeVos, who is somebody that has no experience whatsoever with public education. I'm going to find a teacher, actually, someone who has experience in the classroom. I saw him, his first EPA pick was Pruitt, who spent all his time fighting, suing the EPA, and somebody who just believes that the Environmental Protection Agency shouldn't do any protecting.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think we've got to have cabinet appointees that understand the urgency of their position and understand that we are dealing in very difficult times, and you have a patriotic duty to serve. And look, as a person who has worked across the aisle, I made a name for myself, no political party has a monopoly on ideas. And we've got to start recognizing that. The 58 million people that voted a Republican in the last election are not our enemies.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they're our essential allies. They're fellow patriots that we need to move this country forward.
You mentioned in your remarks earlier in Peterborough that running to beat Donald Trump is not enough, and that that should not be the goal of a Democratic electorate and a Democratic candidate. But what is, in your view, kind of the moment in time that we're in, and what would take place if Donald Trump were to get a second term?
So first of all, don't get me wrong. I'm in this race to beat Donald Trump, and I think I'm the best person to beat him. Now, I don't think that you beat him by being like him. The joke I loved in my early in my primary is when I was running for a debate stage in Iowa, and some big guy says to me, "Dude, I want you to punch Donald Trump in the face," and I didn't miss a beat, and I go,
"He's quoting Gandhi in that."
Yeah, exactly. And I just look at the guy and I go, "Dude, that's a felony." You know, the reality is we can't beat him by being like him.
Right.
The heroes of American history that I love is when they face down bigots and demagogues,
right,
and fearmongers like Bull Connor, mm-hmm, in Birmingham. We beat him not by bringing bigger dogs and bigger fire hoses, but by being artists of activism, mm-hmm, that inspire this country to get more engaged. So I believe I could be the leader that inspires more people, because Donald Trump got less votes than Mitt Romney did, and yet he wins? Come on. We need to make sure we have the highest possible voter turnouts, and I know that I'm a leader that can help to ignite and inspire more activism and more engagement. And so Donald Trump having a second term is not an option. It really isn't. I mean, if he's as a second term, we won't deal with the climate crisis. Scientists are saying that we have about a decade to deal with that crisis. If we lose half that time now with more Donald Trump, who's denying that climate change is even a problem, there will be trillions of dollars worth of global costs to lacking American leadership on this issue. So there's so many issues like that are dire that really demand that not just me, but all of us commit ourselves to having him be a one-term president. And so that's the part of the drive. But if it becomes another partisan battle where we're ripping our country apart to win the White House, it'll be harder to heal and to bring this country together to take on the big issues like climate change. And that's why I think the way that we win is very, very important. We beat his darkness with our light. We beat his hate with our love.
We'd be remiss if we didn't bring up impeachment at least once before this interview is over.
Yes.
If it gets to the Senate, which is very, very possible, what is your role? Do you try to convince some of your fellow Republicans or your Republican colleagues to come over to your side?
Yeah, look, the Constitution delineates quite clearly what my role is. I'm a juror. There's 100 people that have to vote. And I will take that role very seriously. I don't know what the articles of impeachment will be. I don't know if there'll be 3 articles, 50 articles, but I will evaluate the evidence as it's presented. Now, of course, I'll have conversations with my colleagues, and of course, I will try to be persuasive. This is a sobered process that should be dealt with honor, not in a partisan way, but in a patriotic one, not in a way that further rips our country apart, but where we try to pull this country to common ground. And that's the values I'll bring to the fight at the end of the day. I'm hoping that when it comes to the Senate, that Republican senators in particular, because it is a Republican president, will not be partisans, but will be patriots, will not be about the politics, but really be about the people and the republic as a whole.
In conclusion, the most pressing issue, I think, ahead of us right now is the Yankees are...
Oh. Why?
Still,
why would you
still kind of reeling?
I talk about decency and kindness.
We're
why would you?
We're Yankee fans.
I know, good, but why would you just like bring? It's like you ripped my scab. It barely had started to heal. How could we lose that when we got those 2 runs, tied it up?
Yeah.
I thought that was it, the big mo. And
my son, he didn't stay up for the whole game. He's 7, huge Yankee fan, and he asked me who won, and I told him who won. He's like, "I need to go downstairs for a little bit." So he goes downstairs, and then we're driving a little bit later, and he's like, "Dad, I don't know if I should tell you this or not, but when I went downstairs, I cried for about 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
He's like, "Those are my boys."
Wow.
I'm like, "Oh, that's special."
That is Cory Booker. This is On Background, presented by the New Hampshire Healthcare Association. Thanks so much for joining us for the show this week.